Hi, this is Zoe Raff, and this is episode 4, 3 ways to lead meaningful change. Did you like it? Did you like my radio voice? All right, let's get onto it.
Welcome to the Zoe Raff Leadership Podcast, your source of strategies and insights to make you a better leader. Influence, improve, inspire.
Welcome, and I hope you're having a spectacular day so far. A little update on Dragon, my little chook. She seems to have kicked on really well. So a little bit of spew earlier on this week, and she's all good. So she lives to peck and scratch another day. It's a win for chicken lovers everywhere. The other thing I learned this week, apart from chicken mastery, is Aussie expressions. Every week, there's something new. I've been here 20 years, and I'm still learning. So this week, it was a call from my friend Josie, who features in my upcoming book, Moments. And there's a story about her and her daughter. And she said, she rings me up and she says, "Now, I only have one concern." And then I brace myself. And she says, "You used the word panties in part of the story." I thought, oh no, I've offended her. And she said, no, you haven't offended me. She's Irish, by the way. So this is an Irish woman picking up a Canadian in Australia for this. And she said, "Nobody uses the word panties in Australia." I'm like, serious? Apparently not. Panties is out, knickers, underpants, and so forth. And so there's no way they're using the Canadian expression gitch or gotch. That's no one would get that one. Anyway, lessons learned every week here in Canberra, Australia. So a couple of announcements for you. My book, Moments, Leadership When It Matters Most, actually goes to the typesetter today. How exciting. So the book cover is almost done. Things are coming to fruition. They'll be at the printers within a week. Woo, exciting. The Edge of Leadership is my big event that's happening next year here in Canberra in March. I am so excited to announce that my keynote speaker is none other than Dr. Jason Fox himself, the elegant pirate extraordinaire. He's a great leadership thinker and a really wonderful guy. And just a delightful speaker, and he's just going to be a huge asset to the whole day. All that will be happening at the Edge of Leadership here in Canberra. So I'll post a link to both the book. The book page isn't up yet, but I'll post a link to the Edge of Leadership event, which goes live for early bird tickets this week too, in the show notes, which you can get at zoerauth.com/podcast/4, like the number 4. All right. The other thing you might want to do when you head over there is to zoerauth.com is sign up to get my free video series, which is called Grace Under Fire. Short 1-minute videos. And that way you'll stay up to date with all the announcement also related to the event and to the book and to all other good things like my awesome leadership articles that I publish every week. All right. So what I'm reading this week, I'm reading An Everyone Culture, new book by Robert Keegan and Lisa Leahy, who also wrote Immunity to Change. So Immunity to Change was quite an interesting book. It looked at how to map your thinking and your understory or your backstory, not your backstory, but what is it that's keeping you from really embracing change? So looking at your assumptions and your underlying patterns underneath that. And quite a juicy, good book. This book, An Everyone Culture, is taking a new tack and looking at how, as leaders, you can galvanize the troops by taking an inclusive developmental approach to your organization. And the 3 case studies that they profile in the book show really tangible, profitable outcomes by putting their organizations and their people development through this process. So it's worth reading so far. I'm about 2/3 of the way through, and I'll pop a link in the show notes for you so you can check it out. I love that it's a post-conventional approach to building organizational culture. Post-conventional, meaning it's just not the same old, same old. It's actually quite a rigorous systems approach to engaging with people. Very cool. The question I'm pondering this week is, what can we learn from the U.S. political campaign? Now, this may all be over by the time you listen to this podcast. However, I think the rhetoric and the conversation is universal both to U.S. political campaigns as well as to Australian ones, and probably to political campaigns around the world. And what I'm noticing is that there is such a pervasive, divisive approach to politics to leadership, there really is an us versus them dialogue when people are putting forward their arguments. And at the end of the day, whoever gets into government needs to work with the other side. It's not going to be all or none. It's going to be all. And I think this divisive language is really a stumbling block for us. And it's something that we really need to get over, I think. So sometimes when we look at things that are outside of our control, and it can feel like politics is outside of our control, unless we're in politics, of course, what do we do with that? What do we do with that when we look at these things that we find abhorrent and troubling, and all we feel we can do is complain about it? Well, I don't want to be one of those, that's for sure. I think we can do things about this, and we can use the things that irk us as a springboard to really look at where we're going to invest our energy to be change drivers. So this is a thing. We judge and we reject what we don't like. And that actually does nothing to solve the problem. And it sort of just keeps the thing that we dislike at arm's length. And judgment really is an opportunity for influence. So whenever we find ourselves judging or rejecting something, pause, because there's an opportunity here. I think the important thing of what not to do is not to hit back, but to speak up. And Michelle Obama's famous speech now about her standing up in opposition, or perhaps as an alternative solution, or as a statement about what is appropriate and what is not, is an important thing. So in her speech, basically in response to Donald Trump's commentary around women that surfaced about 10 years ago, she basically said why it's wrong to do that kind of sexual assault, why it's wrong to brag about it, and so on. And she models what's possible. She models an alternative viewpoint that is respectful of women, that is embracing of men and women, and she elevated the conversation. She didn't necessarily denigrate her opposition. She highlighted the faults in the argument and asked us to do better. And I think that is a great example of what we can do with the things that irk us. Rather than just slam the other person, criticize them for their personality or their approach, is actually look at the argument and find the nugget of change that we want to espouse instead in it. Instead of slapping down the argument, elevate our own. And I think that's a really useful approach to take. So when we're looking at things that irk us, what do we do about it? There are three really significant influence inflection points that we can focus our activity and our message around. And the structure for this comes from a book by Richard Hames called The Five Literacies of Global Leadership. Fabulous, convoluted, detailed book, basically fairly academic book. The people I've given it to, some have struggled through it. I found it fabulous. And it basically takes a very systematic and systems viewpoint of complex problems and gives us a map, basically, to look at them. And he uses this iceberg-like model. Icebergs are very useful as models, I find. And he said there are layers to problems. And he said at the top layer, the really visible layer of the problem, like the visible part of an iceberg, is the symptom of the problem. So the visible stuff. So we might look at something like us versus them dialogue and go, well, that's very visible. That's a visible symptom. And some of our activity in terms of driving change can be around looking at the system, at the symptom, sorry. So how can we fix that? If you think about social change, though, there's other things like homelessness. So the visible problem of homelessness are people sleeping on the streets. It's very visible, and we want to fix that visible problem. All sorts of social change agents arise to help deal with that symptom. People who offer free clothing and free housing and support to homeless people is an example of people addressing the problem at a symptom level. All extremely helpful and necessary. And it does not go necessarily to solving the long-term problem of preventing people landing up on the streets. So Hames delves a little bit deeper, and he goes, well, there's likely systems that are causing that symptom. So there are things in our political system, in our economic system, and our environmental system, our social systems, the layers of systems that might be creating unwittingly often that symptom. And so we can look at being a change driver around that. So we can look to change systems, whether it's a legal system or a financial system that would help alleviate or stop the symptom from arising. And the third layer is story. Now, this is quite an interesting one. And Richard Hames talks about meta story. There are some big picture cultural memes that then, out of which we then develop systems and out of which then come symptoms. So an example of this, of how to make an intervention, which I find quite interesting, like it's just such a classic case, is the story of smoking in Western culture. So 50 years ago, the story around smoking was smoking is cool, right? We had the Marlboro Man, the cowboy dude who ran a lot, you know, he was always seen on his horse smoking a Marlboro and it was cool. You had movie stars always smoking. Now, when was the last time you saw a movie star smoke in a movie, except if they were the bad guy? So 50 years ago, if you were cool, you smoked. And that was the meta story. So the big story underneath that. And there were easy distribution systems for smoking, and there weren't necessarily any visible symptoms of any problems until people started getting sick and dying of smoking-related diseases. Therefore, symptoms started to arise about the issue. So at the top of the pyramid, or top of the iceberg around this issue, was people getting sick from smoking. And so some change initiatives arose to try and help people to stop smoke, like, don't smoke, it's bad for you. So trying to just stop them from smoking at the surface level. And if you've ever been a smoker, you know how difficult it is to smoke, to quit smoking. It's not just as simple as just stop. There's a few things that go quite deeply into us that keep us smoking. And some of them are social systems. So I'll confess, I used to be a smoker. Yes, it's true. When I was about, from the age of about 16 to 21, I was an on again, off again smoker. I started smoking with those wine tip cigars, of all things to start smoking with. I know, disgusting. And then roll your owns and so on. Because back then it was cool to smoke, of course. Yuck. So symptom, back to symptom of the problem, people getting sick. And one of the symptoms I had was that I inflamed my asthma. Obviously, I had poor lungs, so smoking was not very good. The system that drives or drove people to smoke was socially minded. There was this big culture of let's go for a smoke. The smoko, it's called in Australia. Let's go for smoko, which means let's go for a 10-minute coffee break and smoke. Now you call it smoko, and people go for smoko, and they don't smoke, they have coffee. Interesting side note about Australian culture. So there's social systems at play that supported the symptom of smoking. The other things that made it easier to smoke is accessibility, advertising, etc. And the story around it I already mentioned is smoking is cool. So the thing is about how the anti-smoking lobby started to address driving change about smoking was three-layered. They tried to address it through just encouraging people to quit smoking, so addressing the symptom level. They also addressed it through the system level. So they started campaigning to change taxation laws successfully, advertising restrictions, successful campaign there. So in Australia, a couple of things that are of note and quite visible in terms of how they managed to change that is the taxation system went up significantly on cigarettes. So now it's really quite expensive to buy a pack of smokes. I actually have no idea how much it is. It's at least $20 a pack. At least, it's probably more than that now. Visibility, so they had to put, if you run a shop with cigarettes, you actually have to hide them. You can't be visibly displayed. And then, of course, there's all that heinous pictures that they're legislated to put on the cover of cigarette packs. Strangely, the people I do know who smoke don't seem to be deterred by that. It might prevent people from doing it, or at least think twice about it when you have these gangrenous-looking mouths and feet falling off pictures on this cigarette package. However, effective. So they tackled it from symptom. They tackled it from system, political, economic, taxation, marketing systems. And the third one was the story. So through relentless advertising campaigns, they started to show emotional stories about what it means if you smoke, get cancer, and die. And it really hit home for people. So there's this one particular ad I remember where it's a woman, she's getting a call from the doctor. She's at home in the evening and she's told she's got lung cancer and it's fatal and she hasn't got long. And she looks over her shoulder at the picture of her two kids playing in the background. And she knows at that moment that her smoking will mean that her kids won't have a mom. So it's a pretty powerful emotive story that catches us off guard, I guess, or hits us really hard. And that kind of campaigning has been quite effective. It makes people think twice about smoking. Who are they going to leave behind if they continue to do this behavior? And the results speak for themselves. You know, the story around smoking has changed. Smoking is not cool. It is banned here in Australia in restaurants, in pubs, in bars. It's banned off street corners, and there's fewer and fewer places where you can actually smoke. And you're seen as a pariah and a rare bird these days if you smoke. And you can see people hovering out the corners in the middle of winter, and they're rugged up in their winter coats having a smoke, and they don't look cool. They look pretty sad. And that's how you can change the system. I think it's a remarkable campaign that the anti-smoking lobby has. And as change drivers, we can take a similar approach. We can actually look at problems from these multiple layers and make interventions. It's kind of like how we heal the human body. Sometimes we have symptoms, right? So we got a headache. And how do we treat the headache? Generally, we mask the symptom. So we take a Panadol or an aspirin or whatever it is, some painkiller of some sort, and you just kind of just deal with the symptom. If we're a bit smarter, then we start to look at what is the system in my body that's at play here. Am I dehydrated? Do I need more rest? Have I got low blood sugar? We look more systemically about what's creating that symptom. And then if we're sensible about our health management, we'll try and deal with those problems in the system. And if we're really super, super duper smart, then we look at the story about our life and what it is that's creating the behavior that's affecting our system. So if it's a headache and our system is dehydration and lack of sleep, we look at the story behind that. It's like, am I taking care of myself well, or am I neglecting myself? Am I driving myself into the ground with overwork? What is the story here? And what do I need to change? Maybe I need to change the story about self-care and self-management, that I put myself first before I look after others, or that I won't sacrifice my health in order to get work done. So when we look at it holistically like that, we have a better chance of affecting long-term meaningful change. So let's look at another little case study. So big picture change like the smoking story is fascinating, but what does it mean for us on a day-to-day level when we work in organizations and so forth? I have a client, let's call her Emma, and she's working on a big event, and her big event is coming up in a couple months, and she was complaining, notice, these are the symptoms of the problem, she was complaining that she couldn't get traction with the people around her, she didn't have support from other people, it didn't seem like it was a priority to other people, and she was then having to stay back late, working on Friday till 10 p.m., and basically doing overwork on her own and feeling like a victim or like a martyr. So these are all symptom problems. If we were just going to do a Band-Aid solution, we'd say, okay, Emma, stop working after 6 p.m. on this event. You know, fix that one big problem right there with a symptom. And that sort of puts the Band-Aid thing, but it doesn't solve the bigger picture stuff, right? So we look at the system around that. So diving into the issue a little bit better, we explored what kind of support systems, communication strategies was she using. And she was using email a lot to try and engage stakeholders. Well, email. Email's not always the best communication tool when people are really busy, and it doesn't often present the subtleties of tone and importance of different messages. So the communication system was possibly creating some of the problem as well. And certainly she was reacting to the emails that she got back from people who seemed less than supportive in her mind. So we had a communication system problem. We also had authority endorsement system problem, meaning that her supervisors hadn't advocated for the program properly, hadn't set the wheels in motion to indicate to other departments that she needed support. So that needed to be fixed as well. So we started addressing the problem from those, from a systems point of view. And then we dug a little bit deeper and we looked at what is the story going on for Emma and her project. And the story that she had running, which was not helpful, was that no one takes this project seriously. I don't get heard. I don't have respect for my colleagues. So that as her underlying story was not contributing well to her communication. So she'd show up at meetings and with this running in the background, like the undercurrent, and she'd put people off because she's kind of set them up as an adversary instead of an ally, subconsciously at least. So we had to change that. So we talked about, okay, what's a better story to run around this? Maybe people don't know enough about this. Maybe she needs to explain her case more carefully and be more strategic in who she talks to when in order to get sponsorship and support for the program. Much more effective. The next week she comes back to me and she says, it's all sorted. The IT department's way on board. I had a great meeting with my manager and they've advocated for the program. They've set it as a key priority across the teams. And she was way more relaxed. I said, how do you feel? She goes, I feel pretty good. I feel in control. I've decided not to work past 6 p.m. on Fridays. Good win. Good win. That was my biggest win, I think, with her. And it's all on track. So that's a perfect example of how you can address things that irk you and then drive some meaningful change by making carefully considered interventions at these different influence inflection points. And those are symptom, system, and the big picture story. It takes a little bit of effort and focus to dig a little bit. And when you do, you can really make a big difference. So in your own work, you can think about what service and what contribution are you making? Are you just dealing with symptoms? Are you addressing systems? Or are you looking at story? All are necessary in terms of driving meaningful change. And you might advocate to do big picture change across those three layers, or you may commit yourself to just dealing with one particular area. So you might be committed to being a political systems changer and changing an issue around policy and legal systems. Or you might dedicate your life and your work to dealing with symptoms. So you might be focused on not-for-profit organizations that help the homeless, say, for example, and provide shelter and clothing and laundry to people who are struggling on the streets. And that's perfectly a useful and practical and meaningful way to be a change driver. Or you might be a thought leader and you want to change the story of what it means to be a leader or to be a health advocate, etc. So you might focus your energy around that, or you might do all three. However, they're all really important. You just need to be aware of what you're doing to feel galvanized around your mission. I think that's the most important piece. All right, so a couple things for you to take away. Think about the things that irk you. This is an opportunity for influence. That's the first big picture thing. Next, dig a little. What is the symptom this is reflective of? What are the systems that are driving that problem? And what is the underlying story? And then the big choice for you is, where do I want to influence? And then go and do it. Thanks very much. Have a great day, evening, afternoon, wherever you are, whenever you are in the world. And lead well, live well.